Just relax, Tony. You got a big bruise on your head.
Where's my skateboard?
Over there, on my GameCube. I've never seen a purple GameCube before, Tony.
Tony? Why do you keep calling me Tony?
Well, that's your name, isn't it? Tony Hawk? It's written all over your cover art. Did I tell you I finally watched B-Movie?
Like the Jerry Seinfeld B-Movie?
Yes, the Jerry Seinfeld B-Movie.
And how was that?
So I watched it and I went in with this idea of what it was going to be based off of how the internet's just turned it into this outrageous joke in the last couple years. And it's not bad. Like, it's not a great movie. It's a pretty decent movie. It's just very obviously not a movie that should have been marketed towards children, because there's so many things in it that are like, this is not for kids. There's a point in the story where Barry, Jerry Seinfeld's character, Barry B. Benson, where he finds out that bees have been enslaved in like honey farms to produce honey for humans. And the imagery they use to show like the living conditions of the enslaved bees basically make it look like a giant concentration camp. And I was just like, whoa, holy crap.
Okay.
And also there's just like this an extended gag where there's a bee version of Larry King, and Barry and B. Larry King have a big conversation about how the humans have a Larry King. And it's just like ridiculously meta in a way where it's like, no 7-year-old even knows who Larry King is to begin with. Who is this for? Like,
would you give it a B?
I'd give it a B-.
Okay.
Like, you know, DreamWorks has had a few peaks and a lot of valleys. Like, Shrek 1's a peak, and then we go down for a while from there. And then, in my opinion, they don't peak again until How to Train Your Dragon 1. So, the B-movie is like a pretty impressive hill, you know? Like, And that's, I guess, not bad for them.
Yeah. What other movies would you think, like, those animated films? Because, like, at the same time, I know when A Bug's Life came out, Ants came out. And I remember really liking Ants, and I feel like I have to go back and rewatch that.
I remember not liking Ants in comparison to A Bug's Life because I felt like it wasn't as fun. All I know about it now is that it's based off of Brave New World, which is like a really heavy kind of dystopian novel. So that's probably when I was a kid, I was like, this isn't fun. Like,
right. Comparing the two. I know that they're like in Ants, there was like a giant like war scene and stuff like that, where I think Sylvester Stallone's character like gets his head decapitated
yeah.
in it and stuff like that. But like, I know that those two movies came out around the same time. They're very similar in creatures that they used in the movie. So it was kind of the volcano Dante's Peak type thing.
Look, one movie had Heimlich, the adorable obese caterpillar, and one movie didn't. So, like, I don't really know what to tell you.
Okay. All right.
Speaking of a series that's seen huge gaps in quality.
Yes. Welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. Today's episode, Tony Hawk Underground.
Yes, that's right. This is Thugcast.
Ooh, I am so excited. I am seriously so excited.
Yeah?
Today. Yeah.
I know we're a flashback-centric podcast, but this is one of the times where, like, the games literally gave me, like, muscle memory flashbacks to, like, when I played this game the first time. And, like, other titles in this series.
Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I get, like, that nostalgic feel for something, because I play a lot of older games, and, I mean, you know my collection. Majority of it is super retro games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But playing this, I had, like, I was, like so giddy playing this game. Just when the soundtrack hits right at the beginning of the game, and I'm just like, oh my god, yes! Like, it took me back to when I was 16 years old. Like, I just felt like so happy and so nostalgic for this game.
Nice. Very nice.
So, Tom,
hit
me with that nitty gritty.
The nitty gritty. Tony Hawk's Underground was developed by Neversoft, who we've talked about on this podcast before, and published by Activision, who we've talked about on this podcast before. And it is part of the Tony Hawk franchise of skating games. It was released on the Game Boy Advance, GameCube, PlayStation 2, and Xbox in North America on October 27th, 2003.
And one other thing, too, about this, the Game Boy Advance version, also made by Vicarious Visions, who we've talked about on this podcast before.
This is just a big old reunion episode.
So let's just start right off at the beginning of this with the history of Tony Hawk. Mm-hmm. How did you jump into it, Tom?
I believe 2 was the first one I played. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. So yeah, they're just very kind of arcadey, loose games where you play as professional skateboarders in contained arenas and you're dropped in and assigned challenges, or you can just go for high scores. It's a very kind of freeform game where the objective is just to like have as much fun as you can doing the most ridiculous skateboard stunts as you can.
Yeah.
And it's a golden formula. Like, the best games in these series leave you with such satisfaction when you get good at them and like just pull off perfect tricks. It's so fun.
Yeah. I remember I was at a Pizza Hut back in the day and I got a demo disc with my kids' meal, and it had the demo to Tony Hawk 1.
Okay.
In it. And I was playing it, and man, was I loving it. The big difference with the original Tony Hawk games to Tony Hawk Underground was the original Tony Hawk games, you had 2 minutes to do a list of like goals in it. And you can keep going back and playing and replaying and replaying the levels over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But with Underground, you actually got a story mode to it.
Yes. And while previous Tony Hawk games had some player creation and customization options, in this game, you're specifically tasked with creating your own original character, and that's your player character in these levels, in the story mode and even in the just, you know, casual modes.
Yep, you get to create your own character, get to create your own skateboard, get to create your own special tricks.
Mm-hmm. And can I say something real quick, since we're bringing this up? So the logic behind this game's choice to only let you play a created character, because while there are skateboarding pros and legends in this game, you can only play your original character, primarily. The logic behind that, stated in my research, was that due to the amount of illegal activities committed in this game, they thought it would be bad for the image of the professional skaters to have them doing such activities. And I'm like, hang on a second. We've had a handful of games in the series up to this point where you have professional skaters breaking into government facilities, destroying mall kiosks, running away from police officers, instructing them to stop their antics. So, like, if they were worried about being, you know, seen as poor role models, they've already done the damage at this point, you know?
Yeah, yeah, might as well just keep going with it. And that's one thing we'll get into then about playing as the pros, because that kind of goes into a little bit towards the end of the game.
Mm. So with that in mind, yes, the main event here is the storyline, which will be kind of breaking down beat by beat. Josh, do you want to take that away?
So yes, the first thing with this game, you get to decide what difficulty you want to pick, which is the first time you can do that in any of the Tony Hawk series.
Mm-hmm.
So the story starts off with you as a skateboarder in the wonderful state of New Jersey.
Yeah, dirty Jersey.
You get to hang out with your best friend, Eric.
Hold on. His full name is Eric Sparrow. I thought that was hilarious, because it's like, are sparrows like the mortal enemies of hawks in nature? I want like some kind of scientist to tell me about this. It was like, we got to give him a name that like really resonates. It's like Eric Sparrow.
Which his voice just kept going through me.
Oh, I don't know if they intentionally got a voice actor to do that, or, you know, if that's just the guy, how the guy they hired sounded, but
when he's talking like this all the time.
I mean, props to them for making the antagonist really unlikable. Not just in his actions, but in how he sounds.
Yeah. Let's talk about his actions right off the bat, though, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
This guy goes and is stealing from drug dealers and causing issues and lighting their cars on fire and then having you skateboard over them just to be cool.
Listen, I can't say that I understand what it's like on the mean streets of New Jersey. I'm a PA boy. I guess I'm just, you know, that's a whole other world for me. But I'm going to ask a question, and that's not a question I want you to answer. I'm just going to say this out loud a couple times in this podcast. Why is your character friends with Eric? Because this guy, from the second we meet him, it's like, you didn't cut him loose years ago? No? Does he have a big house or something? You know, like, is his sister
he's
hot?
The one that has, I don't know. He's like, the one that has a Genesis and a Super Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, there's always something, you know. I don't know. I don't know what Eric's gimmick is, but he must have one.
Yeah. But you skate around, do a couple missions throughout New Jersey, and then you have to go to Chad Muska's demo, trying to get noticed by Chad so maybe you get sponsored or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first of many appearances from real-world professional skaters.
Yep. From there on, you do get noticed a little bit. He's telling you to go meet this Mr. Peralta, see about joining his skate team.
Mr. Stacy Peralta. Yeah. The filmmaker behind Dogtown and Z-Boys, which is a killer movie if you have not seen it.
They are. They are fantastic films. So you go meet up with Mr. Peralta.
Mm-hmm.
You do a couple more missions for him. And then that's when we're talking about chasing after drug dealers because they kidnapped Eric, I believe.
Well, yeah. It's the first at several points in the game where you have to do something to the benefit of Eric, and it's like, why? Like, let him pay for his problems.
Yeah. He keeps screwing up and making you have to fix all the issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But can I just say, chasing down drug dealers while Rock and Roll All Night by Kiss is playing in the background? Fantastic. Like
not something I knew I needed, but
yeah. I mean, I just next time I'm in the mean streets of New Jersey and I'm chasing after drug dealers because they kidnapped my best friend, mm-hmm. I'm going to blast Rock and Roll All Night. And it's only going to be the live symphony version of it. And I'm going to be skateboarding through the town.
Hey, it helps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It adds a little bit more speed to you.
How do you feel about the New Jersey section as a level for you to explore and everything, because exploration is pretty big in this game?
I didn't mind it at first. It was a little bland,
mm-hmm.
until you can actually jump the bridge to go over to the area like where the subway and stuff like that is, and then it opened up so much more for you. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, I really hope that there's more to it. And that's one thing with these levels, they were kind of small compared to some of our other Tony Hawk levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand we have a story mode. We're going to probably be going to different cities and different states and countries and stuff like that. But when I think of like games like Tony Hawk 2, the levels were huge in those games. Like there was one time like you have to like, okay, well, I have to go and do this one particular thing. So I have to skate across the entire map. And it might take me like 25, 30 seconds to get to one end of the map, and you only have a 2-minute time frame to get over there.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you, but my kind of opinion behind it is just like, in previous games, stuff was spread out in a way that kind of made a little bit more sense progression-wise. You know, like, as you found things, it was like, oh, of course, like, moving from here to there would have gotten me this. Ah, yeah. But in these, the goal was make it bigger so that they have to explore it more. So sometimes things can seem just kind of randomly scattered about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, you're jumping on top of houses, and like you said, like, you're on the subway dodging that. And, yeah, sometimes things just seem like... I don't want to directly state this because I didn't come across it in my research, but I feel like this was in the point of gaming development where a lot of people were like, build off of the success of GTA 3. So, you know, the ability to kind of walk around these big levels was probably born out of that, or I mm-hmm. would assume so anyway.
Yeah. But after that, you go ahead, you have to skitch on the end of a sports car.
Make Marty McFly proud.
Yep. And then you have to launch yourself over this bridge to get to the other side because you're running away from the drug dealers. So you get over there, and there's a cop there who stops you from going into the subway. So the only logical thing to do to get past the cop is to skate around a sidewalk 3 times to make him dizzy.
Yeah.
When he falls over, you hop in the subway, and you book it to New York.
I mean, it just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, all cops have vertigo. You know, that's just something they live with. It's a struggle. And, you know, I'm not endorsing criminals to make cops dizzy as a means of getting away from them, but that's just how it happens.
Yeah. So we get to New York, and this is where the missions start to kind of get a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, hey, I want to go inside this building here. So what am I going to do? I'm going to skate around and get nuts from vendors and deliver them to the security guards, because they're going to love them so much that they're going to leave the building. That's a little weird.
I don't know. Logic isn't always a strong suit of this game, but it gives you something to do while you're exploring the levels. I'll say that.
Like getting into a car and driving around and destroying all those nut vendors as well, right?
Yeah. Because, like, when I play a skateboarding game, the thing I want to do is drive. So, you know.
Yeah. And this is the first time, too. I think New York level was the first time that I noticed a lot of the advertising in it.
Mm.
There's, like, 3 McDonald's in New York right there.
Yeah. Besides the real world, like, skaters showing off their brands and stuff like that, they do squeeze in a bunch of little product placements into this title. Did you keep, like, a tally of everything you saw, product-wise?
I noticed a lot of McDonald's. I think there was, like, 1 or 2 cell phone companies as well. I think there was one in the Hawaii level as well. Some things, Tom, don't age well. And some things are awesome. And this is one of those things that have done both.
It's aged well and poorly?
No, it's aged well and is still awesome.
Oh, okay, great. Yes. I'd agree that it's still really awesome, but what kind of triggered that for you?
When I had to do missions for the Japanese chef,
mm-hmm.
and you can clearly tell that it's an American guy doing the voice of a Japanese chef.
That's aged well for you?
No, that has not aged well.
Oh, okay.
No. That's one of those things I was like, oh. This is in this game. And I understand 2004 was a long time ago.
We had a lot to learn.
Yes. I mean, it seems like it was taken right from South Park. Do you know what I'm saying? The mm-hmm. The Mongolian guy.
Yeah. We're just the same voice actor does everybody.
Yeah.
Whether or not the race is appropriate.
Right. It was one of those things. When I first heard that, I was like, ooh, that's not good. That's a little rough. But other than that, in New York, really just kind of skated around, did some tricks just to kind of advance the story a little bit further until we got over to Tampa. That's where we were going. Tampa, we have our first tournament to become an amateur skateboarder.
Well, we're supposed to. You want to tell everybody what happens?
Well, we got screwed out of it.
By who?
By Eric Sparrow.
Eric, why are we friends with him?
What does Eric do to us this time, Tom?
He gets arrested. And you know what you have to do?
What do you gotta do?
You gotta go on little fetch quests for the cops down in Tampa to get Eric out. And
oh,
it's like,
you mean like exposing cheating couples by jumping over their vehicle?
Yeah, because that's
while they're inside of it doing stuff,
because that's police business. You know, these are less police and more like security guards for the cast and crew of Cheaters. But yeah, you have to do shenanigans for Eric, and then what does he do to you, Josh, after you get him out of trouble with the police? What does he do?
He forgets to sign you up for the tournament,
conveniently.
Isn't that weird?
It's almost like he's a bad person.
So now you have no way to get in.
Mm-mm.
So you're out there kind of moping around, and there's this guy over there named Tony Hawk, and he's like, hey, what do you got?
And you're like, I don't know, Anthony.
Show me what you got. Show us what you got.
He's like, show me your moves.
So then you have to do some tricks for Tony Hawk, try to outdo his score, and then you have, just to impress him. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to put you on the list. And he does.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in. And then it gets down to you versus Eric in the tournament.
And for some reason, Eric, your best friend, isn't happy to see you there.
But why? If you forgot to put my name on there, like, you shouldn't have no issues with me still joining it.
It's really suspicious.
It's like he almost thinks that we're too good. But anyway, we whoop him.
Mm-hmm.
We win. Everyone celebrates us. And he gets mad at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's on to San Diego.
Yes, because now we're joining a crew.
Yep. With our manager, I'm just going to call him Slobby Todd.
the super iconic character, Todd. Hey guys, it's me, Todd.
I'm just kind of a middle-aged, chubby white guy. Don't mind me just being all slobby-like.
Everyone knows there's two iconic Todds. There's Todd from Fox and the Hound and Todd from Tony Hawk Underground.
Oh, I was going to say the Todd from Scrubs.
Oh, okay. Well, he's a the Todd, you know, like...
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, it's like, it's okay.
Class of his own.
Okay. So now we're in San Diego, skating around, doing a couple more missions. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get photos taken of our first magazine cover, which also includes, you know, like clearing flower pots off of buildings and mm-hmm. other stuff like that.
What I liked about this game is that it's very particular about the need to promote yourself. You know, several times throughout this game, missions involve like get a video of you doing tricks, get some photos of you for the press. You know, like this game teaches you the value of putting yourself out there.
So you had to throw a party for yourself.
Mm-hmm. A party with Eric didn't really help you set up at all, but you know.
It's weird. You end up doing everything by yourself in this game. Yeah. Nobody helps you.
No, it's really weird. It's all about promotion, baby, you know? All about selling yourself.
And what better place to sell yourself at than Hawaii?
Yeah.
So this is about halfway through the game right here. I think it's like chapter 14 or something like that.
And this is like a climactic moment in the game, a key moment in the game.
I know. The chapter 14, get laid.
Ooh. The puns are on fire in this game, by the way.
So first mission that we really have to do in this level here is we have to clear out the pool. What better way to clear out the pool? By putting poop in it.
Yep. Classic.
We can skate.
That's not like a safety violation or a health code problem. Yeah.
Nope. We had a wall plank off of a soda machine like 3 times or something like that just mm-hmm. to get the poop in there. But yeah, once the water is drained out of the pool, then you can climb up on top of the hotel that you're staying at, jump off of it into the pool, and everyone thinks you're the coolest person in the world now.
I mean, it just makes sense. Pools make you cool.
Yeah. And this is where the difficulty, I think, when I played through on normal mode, and this is kind of where the difficulty started to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the missions and some of the jumps and some of the transfers that you had to do had to start getting a little bit more precise as you were going through. And that's where it leads to the end of this level, where you had to find your secret spot, which was on the roof of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the place from which you perform the McTwist. Yep.
Which is a really awesome skateboard move. I will not lie there. But
it's not just any McTwist, Josh. What kind of McTwist is it?
It is a McTwist over a helicopter.
Ooh.
So it's extreme.
And luckily, Eric got it all on camera.
Did he?
He did. He was there holding the camera.
Okay. So let's go to...
I trust him.
So let's go and let's watch that footage. So let's head to Vancouver to do a premiere for our video. We're going to throw a party. We're going to have skateboarding people all over the place. The same skateboarding people we keep seeing in every city that we keep going to, that keep giving us missions to do. They're all here for this party.
Yeah. And the tax breaks are better.
And you show up a little late and you ask how your part was in the movie. And you find out,
Eric cut out the McTwist.
But why would he do something like that?
It's almost like he's a bad person. And he's like, oh yeah, bro, I'm sorry. You treat the McTwist, it wasn't in the video. Like, and you're like, oh, that's okay, Eric.
Now this is pretty much right where Eric has become the villain of the story.
I mean, the audience is well aware of this, but your character is just like, well, Eric, I'm still your friend.
It's like, Eric. Mm-hmm. So we get into a fight with Eric there shortly in Vancouver, and then it finishes with you actually going to skate to become a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Which you lie on your application, because they're like, you don't seem like a pro when you put your name down in the pro column. And it's like, yeah, I am. And you actually beat Eric, and then it's like, oh, you lied to get in here, and you cheated, and blah, 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 and they still allow you to become a pro anyway.
It's weird because, like, so Eric becomes a pro before you due to the video which he edited, right? So when you lie to get into the competition, you are then put through Eric's course, you know? And it's like, Eric's such a bad antagonist because, like, he's giving you a chance to beat him. And it's just like, why didn't he just, like, reveal you as a liar and just get you thrown out, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's bad at everything.
But with becoming a pro, you get to create your own skateboard deck, which was kind of cool. It was something a little different than playing mm-hmm. through this. I didn't dive too deep into it because I kind of just wanted to play the story mode for the podcast. But I remember making some really cool decks back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But after that, we go to good old Mother Russia.
Moscow.
Something.
Oh, yeah. I only know English.
So while we're in Moscow, we're doing some crazy skateboard tricks onto tanks and grinding on tanks and turning them and blowing stuff up, and we're doing manual tricks to get reporters away from a prostitute and all kinds of weird stuff in Moscow. I mean, whatever they do over there, by all means, continue to do it.
And meanwhile, Vladimir Putin's just looking out a window like, these Americans. But most importantly, we make up with Eric. We patch things up. It's like, you know what, all that stuff that happened in America, we're in Russia now. We got to
do some really cool, like, doubles where, like, you both mm-hmm. would skate at the same time. He would go under, you would go over, you would go under, he would go over, stuff like that. And it was really cool because this is, like, the first time we really got to see that in the Tony Hawk games, kind of like a co-op mode.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, like, you know, they're just getting back to basics. They're skating for the fun of it.
Soul,
you know?
Skating, as some would call it.
Soul skating. Yes. Well, yes.
So later that night, though, after you guys are celebrating, Eric's a little tipsy.
Little half in the bag.
Yeah, I'd say that. He hops in a tank and decides to steal a tank and just causes all kinds of destructions with it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you being the good-natured guy, you're like, I'm going to hop in that tank and get my buddy out of there so he doesn't get in trouble.
Yep. And what are the odds? Eric was nowhere there when you guys get caught.
Nope. He bails.
You end up getting caught, getting thrown in jail, causing mm-hmm. $700,000 worth of damages.
You literally cause an international incident. The effing U.S. embassy has to bail you out of jail. Like, I love how high they make the stakes of that, you know?
You just have to, I mean, it's a skateboarding game, so you do have to take it to the extreme.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
So everyone heads back to America, except for mm-hmm. you, who's stuck in Russia,
mm-hmm.
performing all of these quests to kind of get back to America. We're not going to say mm-hmm. if it was legally done or not. We don't know. We may have had to drive a car, pick up a couple prostitutes, drive them back, but we couldn't go to that party. I don't know.
Hey, as long as you're making money to get back to America, it's all's fair in my book.
We were doing this quest for this guy named Vladimir, who we had to just keep transferring these packages between people. It was kind of weird. But, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. whatever, man. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So once we get back to America, we get to create our own skate team.
Mm.
And we get to choose 5 skateboarders from the list that the game has, from such names as Bob Burnquist and Rodney Mullins, Bucky Lassick, Tony Hawk, Bam Margera. There's a whole, I think there's like 10 to 12 skaters you can choose from it. Which, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. This is one of the only times where you can actually play as other skaters in this game.
And big shout out to my boy Bam, who recently finished renovating his family's house, which was seen on Viva La Bam, and you can now rent that property on Airbnb.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. If you're ever out in the Poconos and want to stay in Castle Bam, go for it.
This is probably the most difficult part of the game for me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the missions that they have you do, especially in normal mode, were a little difficult. A lot of them were like combo driven. Some of them were like certain lines that you had to run and they had to be perfect. I replayed this several times to try to get through, and I did. It was It was a little rough.
But you made it because you were a pro and you got your team of pros.
That's true. I was soul skating.
Soul skating.
But then after you complete these five missions, you are back in Jersey, face to face with the man himself,
Eric Sparrow.
So you're talking about, you know, taking your team out and doing amazing things with it because you're such a soul skater.
Mm-hmm.
But Eric shows up on your front door with an old cassette tape thing because it's 2004 and that's what things are recorded on back then.
We're on like the last legs of VHS. I know. It doesn't go much longer.
No. And on this tape is you performing the McTwist over the helicopter.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that Eric sabotaged you?
I mean, I'm not saying it. I'm just saying.
Wait. Are you telling me there's a scene where Eric reveals that all the uncool things he did throughout the story were intentional?
I mean, I'm not going to say that he was monologuing, but...
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Eric reveals he was actually the bad guy the whole time?
I mean, when you put it that way, I guess so.
Oh my gosh. Is this the greatest twist in gaming?
I think of all the backstabbing in gaming, this is probably better than Stefan Roth and Aerith.
I mean, this one hurt the most anyway. You know, like, I thought I could trust Eric Sparrow.
Eric effin' Sparrow.
That's me. So, Josh, what happens after you find out that the tape still exists?
You have to chase Eric down. Proven that you are a better skateboarder. He's going to do this amazing line. You're going to follow him. Man, it took me forever to do this too, because the higher the difficulty, the harder it gets. And it just was pissing mm-hmm. me off the entire time I was doing it.
The first time I played this, I played it on normal difficulty. And I remember like the second thing Eric does in the race is he leaps from the street level all the way up to the top of a telephone pole and he starts grinding on the wires. And I was just like, what?
Yep.
This is bull.
It's why he's Eric Sparrow.
He flew. He flew up there.
But once you defeat Eric's line, you prove that you are the better skater mm-hmm. and you get the tape mm-hmm. and then he throws a little hissy fit.
I mean, it's just another clear example of what I meant by like Eric's bad at everything he does. You know, if you have evidence that can destroy your career, why do you keep it? And also, why do you offer your only adversary a chance to get it back? Like, you're bad at this, bro.
And thus concludes Tony Hawk Underground.
I don't know if you knew this. I only knew this from the Wikipedia while I was researching for the episode. Do you know what happens if you play the game a second time?
Yes, there's an alternate ending. I did watch mm-hmm. it online a mm-hmm. while ago, where instead of doing the line, he just punches him in the face
and takes the tape. And it's like, this is actually way more satisfying.
Yeah, it's one of those like, well, thank God he's finally learned.
It's honestly an instance where I would have loved a QuickTime event. Like, I would have loved to have hit square and thrown that punch, you know? Like, mm-hmm. just let me do it.
So that's it for the story.
As far as the narrative goes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. With every Tony Hawk game, we do have a couple unlockable characters. Which we had Iron Man in there.
Which was so cool.
Thud, which is a parody of Chud, which is an old, like, monster movie from the 80s.
Yeah, baby.
And then you have Gene Simmons.
You know, everyone's favorite skating icon.
Yeah, sure.
Did you feel that, like, in the early 2000s, KISS was kind of inexplicably everywhere, even though, like...
They weren't?
Well, I mean, I feel like they were used as a running gag in a lot of episodes of Family Guy, and then, you know, they're in this. In, like, 2000 or 2001, they showed up on WCW and even introduced like a KISS inspired wrestling character. It's like they had this weird presence towards the beginning of the new millennium, despite like not having a new album out or anything.
Yeah.
It was just like weird. Like they were marketing themselves like crazy.
Yeah. It is weird. It is weird.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about hitting characters in the game. Let's not also forget with every Tony Hawk game comes the amazing soundtrack. We had 77 songs inside mm-hmm. this game, which were fantastic. Everything from, you got some rock, some punk, some hip hop in there. every song in the game is fantastic, just like every Tony Hawk game has been. I think up to Underground 2, after that it kind of dies off a little bit, but man, these, when I booted it up and I started hearing Mommy's Little Monster playing, I'm like, yes, oh my god, I'm so excited right now. Like, these soundtracks to these games are actually some of the best, next to like the Grand Theft Auto soundtracks, I think, for like when it comes to like compilation style soundtracks.
Oh, absolutely. There's such a huge variety of music on here. And it's, I like the comparison to Grand Theft Auto because there were like songs that this game introduced me to, you know? So like, I owe the Tony Hawk series a debt for getting me into certain kinds of like rock bands.
Yeah.
But holy crap. Like, I think it's just so cool that like, you've got The Clash on here, which I loved. You've got Mastodon, you've got Queens of the Stone Age.
Bands like Dropkick Murphy, NoFX, Rise Against, Social Distortion, Sublime's on there as well. But yeah.
Yeah. And just while we're on this soundtrack, do you want to talk about the amazing commercial for this game and the song that was featured in it?
Actually, I don't know about that.
Do you remember Liam Lynch's United States of Whatever?
Oh, yes. Yes.
That song was featured in the commercial for this game. And like they cut it together with footage from the cutscenes in a way that just worked really, really well. Like when the cops are busting you in Jersey, that cutscene is in the commercial. And it's like, I walked up to Officer Leroy. He was like, hey, I thought I told you. It's so good. It's where I heard that song for the first time. Liam Lynch's United States of Whatever. It's one of the best songs of the aughts. Don't at me.
No, it's Tony Hawk's games, like I said, have always had a way with their soundtrack just to be fantastic. And like you said, I mean, a lot of the bands that I listen to still to this day were all from the Tony Hawk games. Like I was introduced through that style of music through the Tony Hawk games. And I'm forever grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about reception, though.
So everyone loved this game, I feel like.
Except for Eurogamer, who gave it a 7 out of 10.
Well, you know, they were upset because they were not included, you know, on this globe-trotting adventure. It's like United States, Canada, skip over Europe, Russia.
On Metacritic right now, it's sitting at a 90% for the PlayStation 2's version of it. IGN and GameZone gave it a 9.5. A couple places gave it 10s and perfect scores. I mean, this game really took off. And I'm not saying it's the best Tony Hawk game out there, but it is certainly one of them.
I think it's very good and very memorable. And in terms of making a story, a kind of like rags to riches, you know, skate glory story, mm-hmm. It's the best that I can even think of. I didn't play Tony Hawk's Underground 2, did you?
I played a little bit of it. I didn't like it too much. It was a little too over the top and like goofy. It was more based off, it was like a giant episode of Viva La Bam.
Okay. And I like Viva La Bam, but I get what you're saying. Like, it's a huge leap from this one.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think the nice thing with this game is if you grew up in the mid-2000s, you understand how teenagers were. This game is almost a perfect representation of how teenagers were in the early 2000s.
For better and for worse, as yes. Eric will reveal.
Yes. But yeah, Tom, overall, what'd you think? Do you still recommend it?
Oh, yeah. This is a lot of fun. I think the game holds up. I think it's both a great Tony Hawk game, if not one of the better ones in the series. I kind of personally like the ones where the action was in shorter bursts, but it's a lot of fun. It's a very interesting time capsule into the mid-2000s, you know, for both how unique that period was and also kind of how, like, we still had a long way to go, but we still made the most of it and had a lot of fun. And, killer soundtrack, probably one of the best gaming commercials of all time, and one of the most hateable villains ever. If you're just in the mood to really rag on an antagonist, Eric Sparrow is the man for you. How about you, Josh?
I love this game. Like I said, it hasn't aged well, but it's still awesome at the same time. Is it the best Tony Hawk game? No, I think 2, 1, and then Underground.
Okay.
I still think Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 is one of the greatest games of all time. I put that in my top 20, maybe top 10, if I ever did a list one day of compiling all my games. But this is a fantastic game. Good story. It's not super long. It's very enjoyable. It can be easy if you want it to. It can be difficult if you want it to as well. I do recommend people, maybe every now and then, just drop it in your system and take it for a spin.
You know, when we were getting ready to do this, we obviously had to, like, find used copies to throw this on, like, retro systems. And talking about the soundtrack at length, I kind of realized, I think that's the reason these have never received kind of HD remakes or ports, because the amount of licensing that would probably go into getting these games, like, ready for release again, 77 songs, you know, like, that's so much royalty money.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a bummer, because now I'm kind of like, oh, Tony Hawk 5, which was, like, the most recent gen release of the series, was very poorly received. I didn't even play it because of how bad the reputation was videos I saw.
It was very rough.
Yeah. It's kind of heartbreaking that, like, the only hiccup to, like, you know, enjoying this game is you have to have a console it was released on, and you got to hunt down a copy.
Yep. I played mine on the GameCube.
I played mine on the PlayStation 2.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all the time that we could spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in the discussion on all things video games. See you in the future.